Chapter 121. Steering linkage and service. Steering linkage. Purpose and function. The steering linkage relays steering forces from the steering gear to the front wheels. Most conventional steering linkages use the parallelogram type design. A parallelogram is a geometric box shape where opposite sides are parallel and equal distance. A parallelogram type linkage uses four tie rods, two inner and two outer, left and right, a center link between the tie rods, and an idler arm on the passenger side and a pitman arm attached to the steering gear output shaft, pitman shaft. See Figure 121-1. As the steering wheel is rotated, the pitman arm is moved. The pitman arm attaches to a center link. At either end of the center link are inboard, or inner, tie rods, adjusting sleeves, and outboard, or outer, tie rods connected to the steering arm, which moves the front wheels. The passenger side of all these parts is supported and held horizontal by an idler arm that is bolted to the frame. The center link may be known by several names, including the following: center link, connecting link, connecting rod, relay rod, intermediate rod, and drag link, usually a truck term only. Other types of steering linkages often used on light trucks and vans include the cross steer linkage. See Figure 121-2 for a comparison of parallelogram and cross steer type steering linkage arrangements. Note: many light trucks, vans, and some luxury cars use a steering dampener attached to the linkage. A steering dampener is similar to a shock absorber, and it absorbs and dampens sudden motions in the steering linkage. See Figure 121-3. Connections between all steering component parts are constructed of small ball and socket joints. These joints allow side-to-side movement to provide steering of both front wheels, and allow the joints to move up and down, which is required for normal suspension travel. It is important that all of these joints be lubricated with chassis grease through a grease fitting, also called a zerk fitting, at least every 6 months or per the vehicle manufacturer's specifications. Some vehicles come equipped with sealed joints and do not require periodic servicing. Some vehicles come from the factory with plugs that need to be removed and replaced with grease fittings and then lubricated. Frequently asked question: why is a grease fitting sometimes called a zerk fitting? In 1922, the zerk fitting was developed by Oscar U. Zerk, an employee of the Alamite Corporation, a manufacturer of pressure lubrication equipment. A zerk or grease fitting is also known as an Alamite fitting. Refer to Figure 121-1. Steering movement is transferred from the pitman arm that is splined to the sector shaft, pitman shaft, through the center link and tie rods, to the steering knuckle at each front wheel. The idler arm supports the passenger side of the center link and keeps the steering linkage level with the road. This type of linkage is called a parallelogram type design. Refer to Figure 121-2. The most common type of steering is the parallelogram. The cross steer and Hultenberger linkage designs are used on some trucks and vans. Tie rod ends. Tie rod ends connect the steering linkage to the steering knuckles and to other steering linkage components. Conventional tie rod ends use a hardened steel bolstead assembled into a hardened steel and thermoplastic bearing. An internal preload spring limits the bolstead end play and helps compensate for ball and socket wear. See Figure 121-4 for two designs of tie rod ends. For many years, Ford Motor Company used tie rod ends that included a rubber bonded steel ball stud. Because there is no sliding friction inside the tie rod end, no lubrication was needed. This type of tie rod end is called RBS, or rubber bonded socket. See Figure 121-5. Rack and pinion inner tie rod ends. Terminology: inner tie rod end assemblies used on rack and pinion steering units require special consideration and often special tools. The inner tie rod end is also called a ball socket assembly. The inner tie rod assemblies are attached to the end of the steering rack by one of several methods. See Figure 121-6. Refer to Figure 121-3. Typical steering dampener used on a Hummer H2. Refer to Figure 121-4. Figure A, a dual bearing design with a preload spring. The use of two bearing surfaces allows one surface for rotation, for steering, and another surface for pivoting, to allow for suspension up and down movement. Figure B, the nylon wedge bearing type allows for extended lube intervals. Wear is automatically compensated for by the taper design and spring-loaded bearing. Refer to Figure 121-5. Figure A rubber bonded socket is constructed of a rubber casing surrounding the ball stud, which is then inserted into the socket of the tie rod end. The hole in the socket allows air to escape as the ball stud is installed and there is not a place for a grease fitting. Figure B. The socket is crimped over the ball so that part of the socket lip retains the stud. Refer to Figure 121-6. Rack and pinion steering systems use a ball and socket type inner tie rod end. Refer to Figure 121-7. A variety of methods are used to secure the inner tie rod and socket assembly to the end of the rack. Staked. This method is common on Saginaw-style rack and pinion steering units found on General Motors vehicles. The flange around the outer tie rod must be restaked to the flat on the end of the rack. Riveted or pinned. This method is commonly found on Ford vehicles. Some roll pins require a special puller, or the pin can be drilled out. Many styles use an aluminum rivet. A special, very deep socket or a large open-end wrench can usually be used to shear the aluminum rivet by unscrewing the socket assembly from the end of the rack while the rack and pinion unit is still in the vehicle. See Figure 121-7. Center takeoff racks. For the center takeoff racks, use bolts to secure the inner tie rods to the rack, as shown in Figure 121-8. Front steer versus rear steer. Terminology. Front steer, also called forward steer, is the term used to describe a vehicle that has the steering gear in front of the front wheel centerline. Having the steering gear located in this position improves handling and directional stability, especially when the vehicle is heavily loaded. Front steer vehicles usually produce an understeer effect that makes the vehicle feel very stable while cornering. If the steering gear linkage is located behind the wheels, it is called rear steer and the cornering forces are imposed on the steering in the direction of the turn. This is an oversteer effect. It tends to make the steering easier and makes the vehicle feel less stable. Most front-wheel drive vehicles are rear steering, with a rack and pinion steering unit attached to the bulkhead or subframe behind the engine. See Figure 121-9. Refer to Figure 121-8. Exploded view of a center takeoff style rack and pinion steering gear assembly. Four-wheel steering systems. Terminology. Some vehicles were equipped with a system that steers all four wheels. Two terms are commonly used when discussing four-wheel steering. Number 1. Same-phase steering. Same-phase steering means that the front and rear wheels are steered in the same direction. Same-phase steering improves steering response, especially during rapid lane change type maneuvers. And Number 2. Opposite phase steering. Also called negative phase mode, opposite phase steering is when the front wheels and rear wheels are steered in the opposite direction. See Figure 121-10. Opposite phase steering will quickly change the vehicle's direction, but may cause a feeling of oversteering. Opposite phase steering is best at low speeds, same phase steering is best for higher speed handling and lane change maneuvers. Quadrasteer. Quadrasteer is a four-wheel steering system that dramatically enhances low-speed maneuverability, high-speed stability, and towing capability. See Figure 121-11. Four-wheel steer mode. The four-wheel steering mode provides three principal phases of steering: negative phase, neutral phase, and positive phase. Negative phase occurs at low speeds and the rear wheels turn opposite of the front wheels. In the neutral phase, the rear wheels are centered and do not turn. Positive phase occurs at higher speeds and the rear wheels turn in the same direction as the front wheels. Four-wheel steer tow mode. The four-wheel steer tow mode provides more positive phase steering than the normal four-wheel steering at high speed. During low-speed driving, the four-wheel steer tow mode provides similar negative phase steering as it does in the normal four-wheel steering mode. Steerable rear axle. The steerable rear axle has a rack and pinion style actuator mounted to the differential cover, specially designed axle shafts, and movable hub and bearing assemblies mounted by upper and lower ball joints. The actuator housing is part of the differential cover. In the event of a system malfunction, the actuator returns the rear wheels to the center position through internal springs. The actuator has specially designed inner and outer tie rod ends. There are inner tie rod boots to prevent contaminants from entering the actuator. The actuator has the rear wheel steering motor assembly attached to the upper housing. There are shields and a skid plate on the rear axle to protect the actuator. There are no internal adjustments to the actuator. See Figure 121-13. Refer to Figure 121-9. In a rear steer vehicle, the steering linkage is behind the center line of the front wheels, whereas the linkage is in front on a front steer vehicle. Refer to Figure 121-10. Opposite phase four-wheel steer is usually used only at low vehicle speed to help in parking maneuvers. Same phase steering helps at higher speeds and may not be noticeable by the average driver. Refer to Figure 121-11. Being equipped with four-wheel steer allows a truck to make shorter turns than would otherwise be possible. Frequently asked question. What is Goofy Mode? Trucks that are equipped with the Quadra Steer system have a three-position switch on the dash. Number 1. 2WS. Number 2. 4WS and. Number 3. Toe see figure 121-12. The Quadra Steer module then determines the right amount of rear steer and in which direction based on vehicle speed and steering wheel angle. If trailer towing mode is selected and the truck is not towing a trailer, the computer will adjust the steering as if there is a trailer and will slightly delay the rear steering action when changing lanes and other maneuvers. As a result, when the steering wheel is turned, the front wheels will, of course, turn in direct proportion to the input from the steering wheel. However, the rear wheels will be delayed in their action to allow the trailer to track properly. If, however, a trailer is not being towed, this delay feels goofy and could result in customer concerns about the proper operation of the Quadra Steer system. Be sure that the control switch is placed in the off or normal modes unless a trailer is in fact being towed. Refer to Figure 121-12. The dash-mounted select switch showing the three positions for the four-wheel steer system. Refer to Figure 121-13. A Quadra Steer system showing all of the components. The motor used to power the rear steering rack can draw close to 60 amperes during a hard turn and can be monitored using a Tech 2. Steering linkage lubrication. Keeping all joints equipped with a grease fitting properly greased is necessary for long life and ease of steering. See Figure 121-14. During a chassis lubrication, do not forget to put grease on the steering stop, if so equipped. Steering stops are the projections or built-up areas on the control arms of the front suspension designed to limit the steering movement at full lock. See Figure 121-15. When the steering wheel is turned as far as it can go, the steering should not stop inside the steering gear. Forces exerted by the power steering system can do serious damage to the steering gear if absorbed by the steering gear rather than the steering stop. Note: many rack and pinion steering units are designed with a rack travel limit internal stop and do not use an external stop on the steering knuckle or control arm. Most steering stops are designed so that the lower control arm hits a small section of the body or frame when the steering wheel is turned to the full lock position. Steering stops should be lubricated to prevent a loud grinding noise when turning while the vehicle is going over a bump. This noise is usually noticeable when turning into or out of a driveway. Refer to Figure 121-14. Greasing a tire odd end. Some joints do not have a hole for excessive grease to escape, and excessive grease can destroy the seal. Refer to Figure 121-15. Part of steering linkage lubrication is applying grease to the steering stops. If these stops are not lubricated, a grinding sound may be heard when the vehicle hits a bump when the wheels are turned all the way one direction or the other. This often occurs when driving into or out of a driveway that has a curb. Dry park test. Purpose. Since many steering, and suspension, components do not have exact specifications for replacement purposes, it is extremely important that the beginning service technician work closely with an experienced veteran technician. While most technicians can determine when a steering component such as a tire odd end is definitely in need of replacement, marginally worn parts are often hard to spot and can lead to handling problems. One of the most effective, yet easy to perform, steering component inspection methods is called the dry park test. Excessive play in the steering wheel can be caused by worn or damaged steering components. Looseness in the steering components usually causes free play in the steering wheel. Free play refers to the amount of movement of the steering wheel required to cause movement of the front wheels. The exact cause of free play in the steering should be determined if the free play exceeds 2 inches, or 5 centimeters, for parallelogram-type steering linkages, or 3/8 of an inch, or 1 centimeter, for rack and pinion steering. See Figure 121-16. This simple test is performed with the vehicle on the ground or on a drive-on ramp-type hoist, moving the steering wheel back and forth slightly while an assistant feels for movement at each section of the steering system. The technician can start checking for any looseness in the steering linkage starting either at the outer tie rod ends and working toward the steering column, or from the steering column toward the outer tie rod ends. It is important to check each and every joint and component of the steering system, including the following. Number 1. The intermediate shaft and flexible coupling. Number 2. All steering linkage joints, including the inner tie rod and ball socket. See Figure 121-17. And. Number 3. Steering gear mounting and rack and pinion mounting bushings. Refer to Figure 121-16. Checking for free play in the steering. Frequently asked question. Why do only a few vehicles use grease fittings? Many years ago, all vehicles were equipped with grease fittings, while today very few vehicles are so equipped. The reasons for this, as given by engineers, include the following. It has been determined that the use of the wrong type of grease can cause more harm than good. If a grease fitting is used to allow grease to enter the suspension or steering joint, then water can also get inside the joint. Grease fittings are often ignored or the greasing of the joint is not performed by the service technician. Low friction joints do not require routine service like the older metal-to-metal joints required. Refer to Figure 121-17. All joints should be felt during a dry park test. Even inner tie rod ends, or ball socket assemblies, can be felt through the rubber bellows on many rack and pinion steering units. Refer to Figure 121-18. The steering and suspension arms must remain parallel to prevent the up and down motion of the suspension from causing the front wheels to turn inward or outward. Tech tip. Jounce rebound test. All steering linkage should be level and work at the same angle as the suspension arms, as shown in Figure 121-18. A simple test to check these items is performed as follows. Number 1. Park on a hard, level surface with the wheels straight ahead and the steering wheel in the unlocked position. Number 2. Bounce, or jounce, the vehicle up and down at the front bumper while watching the steering wheel. The steering wheel should not move during this test. If the steering wheel moves while the vehicle is being bounced, look for a possible bent steering linkage, suspension arm, or steering rack. See Figure 121-19. Refer to Figure 121-19. The center link should be parallel to the ground. Common wear items. On a vehicle equipped with a conventional steering gear and parallelogram linkage, as shown in Figure 121-20, typical items that wear first, second, and so on include the following. Refer to chart on page 1486. Note that there are overlapping mileage intervals for several components. Also note that the mileage interval for an idler arm is such that by the time other components are worn, the idler arm may need to be replaced a second time. For vehicles that use rack and pinion type steering systems, the list is shorter because there are fewer steering components and the forces exerted on a rack and pinion system are in a straight line. The first to wear is usually the outer tie rod ends, one or both, followed by the inner tie rod ball and socket joints, usually after 60,000 miles, 100,000 kilometers, or more. Intermediate shaft U-joints usually become worn and can cause steering looseness after 80,000 miles, or 130,000 kilometers, or more. Note: experienced front-end technicians can often guess the mileage of a vehicle simply by careful inspection of the steering linkage. For example, if the idler arm is a replacement part and again needs to be replaced, and the outer tie rods also need replacement, then the vehicle probably has at least 60,000 miles and usually more. When inspecting a used vehicle for possible purchase, perform a careful steering system inspection. This is one area of the vehicle where it is difficult to hide long or hard service. Tech tip. Wear and non-wear center links. Some center links are equipped with ball and socket joints, which can wear. Other center links are manufactured with holes for ball joint studs only. See Figure 121-21. Generally, the center links that do not use joints are unlikely to need replacement unless a joint becomes loose and wears the tapered stud hole. Knowing which style of center link is used will help determine the most likely location to check for excessive steering linkage play. Refer to Figure 121-20. Typical parallelogram steering linkage. The center link can also be named the relay rod, drag link, or connecting link. Refer to Figure 121-21. Some center links have ball joints while others have tapered socket holes to accept ball joints on the pitman arm, idler arm, and inner tie rod ends. Under vehicle inspection. After checking the steering system components as part of a dry park test, hoist the vehicle and perform a thorough part-by-part inspection. Number 1. Inspect each part for damage due to an accident or bent parts due to the vehicle hitting an object in the roadway. Caution: never straighten a bent steering linkage, always replace with new parts. Number 2. Idler arm inspection is performed by using hand force of 25 pounds, or 110 newton meters, up and down on the arm. If the total movement exceeds 1/4 inch, or 6 millimeters, the idler arm should be replaced. See Figure 121-22. Number 3. All other steering linkage should be tested by hand for any vertical or side-to-side looseness. Tie rod ends use ball and socket joints to allow for freedom of movement for suspension travel and to transmit steering forces to the front wheels. It is therefore normal for tie rods to rotate in their sockets when the tie rod sleeve is rocked. End play in any tie rod should be zero. Many tie rods are spring-loaded to help keep the ball and socket joint free of play as the joint wears. Eventually, the preloaded spring cannot compensate for the wear, and end play occurs in the joint. See figures 121-23 and 121-24. Number 4. All steering components should be tested with the wheels in the straight-ahead position. If the wheels are turned, some apparent looseness may be noticed due to the angle of the steering linkage. Refer to figure 121-22. To check an idler arm, most vehicle manufacturers specify that 25 pounds of force be applied by hand up and down to the idler arm. The idler arm should be replaced if the total movement, up and down, exceeds 1/4 inch, or 6 millimeters. Refer to figure 121-23. Steering system components should be replaced if any noticeable looseness is detected when moved by hand. Refer to figure 121-24. All joints should be checked by hand for any lateral or vertical play. Case study. Bump steer. Bump steer, or orbital steer, is used to describe what happens when the steering linkage is not level. The front tires turn inward or outward as the wheels and suspension move up and down. Automotive chassis engineers call it roll steer. The vehicle's direction is changed without moving the steering wheel whenever the tires move up and down over bumps, dips in the pavement, or even over gentle rises. This author experienced bump steer once and will never forget the horrible feeling of not having control of the vehicle. After replacing an idler arm and aligning the front wheels, everything was normal until about 40 miles per hour, or 65 kilometers per hour, then the vehicle started darting from one lane of the freeway to another. Because there were no bumps as such, bump steer was not considered as a cause. Even when holding the steering wheel perfectly still and straight ahead, the vehicle would go left, then right. Did a tire rod break? It certainly felt exactly like that's what happened. I slowed down to below 30 miles per hour and returned to the shop. After several hours of checking everything, including the alignment, I discovered that the idler arm was not level with the pitman arm. This caused a pull on the steering linkage whenever the suspension moved up and down. As the suspension compressed, the steering linkage pulled inward on the tire rod on that side of the vehicle. As the wheel moved inward, toed in, it created a pull just as if the wheel were turned by the driver. This is why all steering linkages must be parallel with the lower control. The reason for the bump steer was that the idler arm was bolted to the frame, which was slotted vertically. I didn't pay any attention to the location of the original idler arm and simply bolted the replacement to the frame. After raising the idler arm back up where it belonged, about 1/2 inch, or 13 millimeters, the steering problem was corrected. Other common causes of bump steer are worn or deteriorated rack mounting bushings, a non-centered steering linkage, or a bent steering linkage. If the steering components are not level, any bump or dip in the road will cause the vehicle to steer one direction or the other. See figure 121-25. The summary. The complaint: driver complained that the vehicle pulled to one lane and then the other when driving over a rough section of road. The cause: the idler arm was not installed in the correct location to prevent bump steer. The correction: the idler arm was installed correctly and the bump steer was corrected. Refer to figure 121-25. If a rack and pinion or any other steering linkage system is not level, the front tires will be moved inward and or outward whenever the wheels of the vehicle move up or down. Tech tip. The killer bees. The three bees that can cause steering and suspension problems are bent, broken, or binding components. Always inspect each part under the vehicle for each of the killer bees. Caution: do not turn the front wheels of the vehicle while suspended on a lift to check for looseness in the steering linkage. The extra leverage of the wheel and tire assembly can cause a much greater force to be applied to the steering components than can be exerted by hand alone. This extra force may cause some apparent movement in good components that may not need replacement. Refer to figure 121-26. The preferred method for separating the tire rod end from the steering knuckle is to use a puller such as the one shown. A pickle fork type tool should only be used if the tie rod end is going to be replaced. A pickle fork type tool can damage or tear the rubber. Grease boot. Steering linkage replacement. Parallelogram type. When replacing any steering system component, it is best to replace all defective and marginally good components at the same time. Use the following guidelines. Parts that can be replaced individually include the following: the idler arm, the center link, The pitman arm. The intermediate shaft. And the intermediate shaft U-joint. Parts that should be replaced in pairs only include the following. The outer tire odd ends. The inner tire odd ends. And the idler arm, if there are two on the same vehicle, such as GBM's Astro van. Replacing steering system components involves these steps. Step 1. Hoist the vehicle safely with the wheels in the straight-ahead position. Remove the front wheels, if necessary, to gain access to the components. Step 2. Loosen the retainer nut on tapered components, such as tie rod ends. Use a tie rod removal puller, also called a taper breaker, as shown in Figure 121-26, or use hammers to slightly deform the taper, as shown in Figure 121-27. Caution: vehicle manufacturers often warn not to use a tapered pickle fork tool to separate tapered parts. The wedge tool can tear the grease seal and damage both the part being removed and the adjoining part. Pitman arms require a larger puller to remove the pitman arm from the splines of the pitman shaft. See Figures 121-28 and 121-29. Step 3. Replace the part using the hardware and fasteners supplied with the replacement part. Do not reuse the pre-crimped torque prevailing nuts used at the factory as original equipment on many tie rod ends. Caution: whenever tightening the nuts of tapered parts such as tie rods, do not loosen after reaching the proper assembly torque to align the cotter key hole. If the cotter key does not fit, tighten the nut farther until the hole lines up for the cotter key. See Figure 121-30. Always use a new cotter key. When positioning the tie rod ends, check that the stud is centered in the socket, as shown in Figure 121-32. This permits maximum steering linkage movement without getting into a bind if the steering linkage is pivoted beyond the angle the tie rod end can move in the socket. Note: to ensure proper wheel alignment, install the adjusting sleeve with an equal number of threads showing at each end of the sleeve. Some manufacturers also specify a minimum of 3 threads showing at each end. If the sleeve itself is corroded or bent, it should be replaced along with either or both of the tie rod ends, inner and outer. See Figure 121-33. Refer to Figure 121-27. Two hammers being used to disconnect a tie rod end from the steering knuckle. One hammer is used as a backing for the second hammer. Notice that the attaching nut has been loosened, but not removed. This prevents the tie rod end from falling when the tapered connection is knocked loose. Refer to Figure 121-28. A pitman arm puller is used to remove the pitman arm from the pitman shaft. Refer to Figure 121-29. Pitman arm and pitman shaft indexing splines. When replacing tie rod ends, use the adjusting sleeve to adjust the total length of the tie rod to the same position and length as the original. Measure the original length of the tie rods and assemble the replacement tie rods to the same overall length. See Figure 121-31. Service of ball socket assemblies. Inner tie rod end assemblies used on rack and pinion steering units require special consideration and often special tools. The inner tie rod end, also called a ball socket assembly, should be replaced whenever there is any noticeable free play in the ball and socket joint. Another test of this joint is performed by disconnecting the outer tie rod end and measuring the effort required to move the tie rod in the socket, as shown in Figure 121-34. This is called the articulation test. Note: the articulation test is to be used on metal-to-metal ball socket assemblies. Low-friction joints, polished ball and plastic liner type joints, may require less effort to move and still be serviceable. The inner tie rod assemblies are attached to the end of the steering rack by one of several methods. Removing a ball socket assembly usually requires the use of two wrenches or a special tool. See Figure 121-35. The flange around the outer tie rod must be restaked to the flat shoulder on the end of the rack, as shown in Figure 121-36. Always follow the instructions that come with the replacement parts. See Figure 121-37. Note: when replacing a rack and pinion assembly, specify an entire replacement rack and pinion assembly if possible. A short rack does not include the bellows, or boots, or inner tie rod ends, or ball socket assemblies. The labor and cost required to exchange or replace these parts usually make it easier and less expensive to replace the entire steering unit. Refer to Figure 121-30. Align the hole in the tie rod end with the slot in the retaining nut. If the holes do not line up, always tighten the nut farther, or never loosen, until the hole lines up. Refer to Figure 121-31, Replacement tie rod should be of the same overall length as the originals. Measure from the edge of the tie rod sleeve to the center of the grease fitting. When the new tie rod is threaded to this dimension, the toe setting will be close to the original. Refer to Figure 121-32. All tie rod ends should be installed so that the stud is in the center of its operating range, as shown. Refer to Figure 121-33. Figure A, tie rod adjusting sleeve. Figure B, be sure to position the clamp correctly on the sleeve. Refer to Figure 121-34. An articulation test uses a spring scale to measure the amount of force needed to move the tie rod and the ball socket assembly. Most manufacturers specify a minimum of 1 pounds, or 4.4 newtons, of force and a maximum of 6 pounds, or 26 newtons. Refer to Figure 121-35. Removing a staked inner tie rod assembly requires two wrenches, one to hold the rack and the other to unscrew the joint from the end of the steering rack. Refer to Figure 121-36. When the inner tie rod end is reassembled, both sides of the housing must be staked down onto the flat shoulder of the rack. Refer to Figure 121-37. After replacing an inner tie rod end, the socket assembly should be secured with a rivet or set screw depending on the style of the replacement part. Tech tip: Inductive heating tool. Fasteners are often rusted and difficult to remove, especially those that are part of the steering system where they are exposed to road moisture, dirt, and debris. A heating thule, such as the mini-ductor, which uses electrical induction to heat a coil at the tip, is the tool that many experts recommend to use when heating of a fastener is needed. Using this tool allows a technician to heat a part quickly without the hazard of using an open flame. See Figure 121-38. Refer to Figure 121-38. Using an inductive heater caused this retaining nut to be cherry red in just a few seconds. Dry park test. Step 1. Drive the vehicle onto a drive-on type hoist in heaven. Assistant gently rotate the steering wheel back and forth about 2 inches, or 50 millimeters. Step 2. Perform a visual inspection of the steering and suspension system, looking for damage from road debris or other faults. Step 3. As the assistant wiggles the steering wheel, grasp the joint at the outer tie rod end on the driver's side to check for any movement. Step 4. Next, check for any free play at the pitman arm. Step 5. Check the joint between the left inner tie rod end and the center link for play. Step 6. Move to the passenger side and check for any looseness at the joint between the center link and the right side inner tie rod end. Step 7. Check for looseness at the idler arm connector to the center link and the idler arm at the frame mount. And Step 8. Check for looseness at the passenger side outer tie rod end. After the inspection, record the results on the work order. Review questions. Question 1. How is a dry park test performed? Question 2. What steering parts should be replaced in pairs? Question 3. What test procedure can be used to check that the steering linkage is straight and level? Question 4. What is the difference between a wear and non-wear center link? Question 5. What can cause bump steer? Chapter Quiz. Question 1. Which of the following is not a component of a parallelogram type steering linkage? A. Pitman arm. B. Drag link. C. Center link. D. Idler arm. Question 2. How are the inner tie rods attached to the rack on a center takeoff type rack and pinion steering gear? A. Staked. B. Bolts. C. Riveted. D. Pinned. Question 3. A vehicle equipped with four-wheel steering will use what mode when moving at low speeds? A. Same phase. B. Single phase. C. Opposite phase. D. Right phase. Question 4. Steering linkage joints should be lubricated with A. Brake fluid. B. 20W50 engine oil. Circa 80W90 gear oil. D. Grease. Question 5. A vehicle has an excessive amount of free play in the steering wheel and it is difficult to keep it traveling straight on a straight and level road. Which is the least likely cause? A. Worn tie rod ends. B. Excessive play in the ball socket assemblies. C. Worn idler arms. D. Loose pitman arm retaining nut. Question 6. Which of the following steering linkage parts commonly wears out first? A. Center link. B. Pitman arm. C. Idler arm. D. Inner tie rods. Question 7. Two technicians are discussing bump steer. Technician A says that an unlevel steering linkage can be its cause. Technician B says that if the steering wheel moves when the vehicle is bounced up and down, the steering linkage may be bent. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither technician A nor B. Question 8. How much end play is usually acceptable in the tie rod ends? During a dry park test? A. 0. B. 0.010 to 0.030 of an inch. C. 0.030 to 0.050 of an inch. D. 0.050 to 0.100 of an inch. Question 9. Technician A says that torque prevailing nuts can be reused unless damaged. Technician B says that a new cotter key should always be used. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither a technician A nor B. Question 10. New tie rods are being installed. Technician A says to tighten the retaining nuts to specification and then loosen, if needed, to line the cotter pin hole. Technician B says to tighten farther to align the cotter key hole. Which technician is correct? A. Technician A only. B. Technician B only. C. Both technicians A and B. D. Neither a technician A nor B. End of chapter 121.